Welcome to A New Horizon, a space where the extraordinary is within reach and the journey is as significant as the destination. This is Transcillience. I'm Dr. Amber Joy Daniel, here to guide you through the boundless landscapes of possibility and potential that lie before us. Imagine a place where the term quantum leap isn't just a metaphor, but a manifesto, a call to action for all who believe in the power of transformation. Here, we delve into the essence of change, exploring how shifts in perception can lead to leaps in reality. In each episode, we venture beyond the ordinary, guided by stories of innovation, resilience, and groundbreaking achievements. Together, we'll uncover the secrets of those who've leapt through their boundaries, offering you the inspiration and insight to do the same. Transcillience is more than a podcast. It's a platform for all who dare to dream, question, and transform. It's for those ready to challenge their limits and redefine their worlds. Here, we celebrate the curious, the brave, and the relentless pursuit of what lies beyond. So whether you're drawn by the allure of the unknown or motivated by the thrill of the leap, you're in the right place. Together, we'll explore the mechanisms and mindsets that enable quantum leaps in all aspects of life. If you're ready then to embark on this journey, to push the boundaries of what's possible and to leap into a future of endless potential, welcome to Transcillience. Let's leap into the quantum together. Welcome to the Transcillience podcast for today. Our very first, and it's an honor and privilege on our very first podcast to have someone who can tell us a lot more about Transcillience. Transcillience comes from the physics world, so we have a world-renowned physicist, and if you're not in that field, you may not know her, but I'm excited to introduce you to our guest today because she's a genius. Let me share what the dictionary says a genius is. Exceptional intellectual or creative power or intellectual ability. And she's got it in more than one field. She's a creative, she's a wife, a mother, a scientist, she's broken the glass ceiling, she's a seminal author. Everything now is nanotech, nanotech, nanotech. Well, she was the first doing research, and she was the first under what may resemble a gag order to discover that the particles were doing something different. And here, decades later, nanotech is a big deal, but she was the first. It is my distinct pleasure and honor to introduce you to the rocket scientist, entrepreneur, intrapreneur, mother, grandmother, trailblazer, and the epitome of Transcillience personified, Deb Newbury. Welcome, Deb, to the Transcillience podcast.
Happy to be Deb, here, Amber.
You know, Deb, when we think of Transcillience, and we'd like you to tell us what that means, but it is a sudden shift from the way things were to something new, something that hasn't, it's like a quantum leap or something that happens very fast. And maybe you could tell us more about what that really means and how that could apply to our lives.
Oh, boy. Yeah, quantum physics is just entertaining. It's, you know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like life in general. Quantum physics is a difficult subject to understand. There's a lot of math. There's a lot of things that don't make sense when you first look at it. And you've a lot of ideas that you just have to kind of set with and think about and let them sink in, not only your mind, but perhaps your heart. And I think a lot of things in life are like that too, where sometimes the situations can be hard to understand. You might not understand exactly what's happening and you just have to sit. And sometimes it is a drastic change from one place to another. When I was growing up, my dad was in the Air Force, and I can remember times as a child that he would literally walk in the kitchen door, come home from work and tell my mom, "Well, we're moving to Omaha." And my mom would go, "When?" "Well, this week." And so it was literally oh my gosh, we're in Texas, we're in Florida, we're in Colorado, we're in Nebraska, we're in Germany, you know, and it was literally that fast that things had to change, that schools had to change. I had to change, you know, schools and weather and everything else. So kind of that's what it means to me. And from a quantum physics standpoint, you know, teleportation of electrons and photons and that type of thing, the quantum world is a fascinating world. To think about.
And your dad would come home and he would say, we're moving. And then that was it. It would happen. And everybody had to uproot. You know, change management and change resilience is something that people are talking a lot about now. And that's kind of what transilience means. It's a word that's better than resilience, because instead resilience kind of talks about going back to how fast you could go back to the state that you were in before. But transilience is kind of going to somewhere you've never been before and operating there on that new sphere, on that new, I don't know, what do you think?
That's a really good explanation of what it is. And it takes a certain amount, I'm tempted to say courage, but if I say the word courage, that kind of people are going to go, ugh, I don't have courage, so therefore I can't do it. And so that's not exactly what I mean, Amber. It's more of a fortitude or a decision. And, you know, there have been times in my life where I've had to make a decision to follow something, even though I was perhaps quite unsure of what was going to happen, or like, what in the world am I doing here? And, or how am I going to do it? And I guess there's a couple times. One was in high school, but one was in my corporate career when I was doing radiation analysis. I was working in a company, a directorate that we built satellite systems. We built the electronics for satellites. And I was in charge of the radiation and reliability department. And so we did radiation testing because there's radiation in space that can really mess up satellites. And so I was responsible for a lot of the testing of the electronic parts to make sure that they could survive the space environment. And I kind of like to think that I'm a fairly organized person and I like scheduling. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with a game called Park and Shop, but it's basically a board that has an outline of a whole bunch of different stores, and you take your turn and you draw a whole bunch of stores and then you have to create a trip. I love that game because I would always sit there for hours and randomly draw the cards, the stores that I was supposed to go to, and figure out the most efficient route to get to all these stores. You know, now GPS kind of does it for us, but that was a game that I loved playing. So anyway, our program manager had me doing a few things with the schedule and presenting a few things at the customer meetings on schedule and reports and due dates and that kind of stuff. And then he, very quickly, his wife wanted to go back to Washington, D.C. We were in Minneapolis at the time, and he wanted to stay with his wife. So he left. I mean, it was like a 2-week notice, and everybody's going, And we were getting ready to deliver flight systems at that time. So it was a critical time of this program schedule, and he leave. Everybody's having a fit. And they asked him, well, who's going to be the program manager? And he kind of looked over at me and he said, well, Deb. And I went, pardon? And I said, I don't know anything about I'm a researcher. I'm a nuclear, I do radiation testing. I like cyclotrons. And he said, no, I've been training you for the last couple months. You're going to do just fine. And it was that statement when he looked at me and said, you're going to do just fine. All of a sudden, I found myself in front of multiple levels of customers at a critical time in our program with a group of 135 people, engineers, technicians, assemblers, manufacturing. And I'm going, okay, here we go. It was exciting. And I just figured out I was going to do it. And so I think that might be an example of finding myself there. You know, another thing you mentioned, like, you know, glass ceiling or whatever, but things that was interesting in that whole experience was the company that I was working for was very hesitant to put Deb Newberry in terms of at a program management position because they had no female program managers in the company, in the corporation. It was a large company at that time. And so, well, I was a single parent at the time. Not only was I female, but I was a single parent, you know, and it was like, well, you know, she's a single parent, and worse yet, I was a scientist, not a manager. Not I didn't have an MBA. I had degrees in chemical engineering, nuclear physics and stuff. And so, but what it took, Amber, was my customer's customer wrote a letter to the president of the corporation and said, we would like Deb Newberry to be the program manager for this particular program and finish it off and get us our launch, our flight unit. So that kind of settled it. So I, at that point in time, then I followed, kind of went away from the scientific career per se and entered into the management of the space division for this company. So executive
director. The management of the space division for this company. There you are, single female, single mom, stepping into a role like that. How did you feel? Because some people, they allow fear to disqualify them from making that. You said it takes fortitude or a decision to follow something.
More than anything, Amber, what I tell my grandchildren, what I told my children, follow your heart. And I'm kind of getting goosebumps now because it's exciting to even say that. When I was in second grade, I told my parents I wanted to be a scientist. And I was very blessed because they honored that request. And I got the chemistry sets and the microscopes and the telescopes and burnt holes in Air Force housing floors. They had really nice wooden floors, but, you know, sometimes chemicals got a little hot. Anyway, I was just extremely blessed that they allowed me to do that. And then when I got into high school, I wasn't quite sure what kind of scientist I wanted to be. And of course, we did biology, chemistry. And as soon as I hit physics, I fell in love with the subject and thought it was great. But when I was planning to go to college, I kind of had a decision. I started playing flute and the woodwind instruments at a fairly young age, probably around second or third grade, the same time. And I was a pretty good musician, you know, played sax and flute. And I actually had more dollars for music scholarships than I had for physics scholarships for college. And so at that point in time, I had to decide, do I want to be a musician and have science, you know, physics be my hobby, or do I want science to be my career and music to be my hobby? And that was a hard decision, even from a financial standpoint. I chose the physics. I chose the science. And, you know, I still play flute. When I was a starving college student, I ended up selling my saxophone and my oboe because I needed the money. But I still play flute. I played on multiple albums, backup, not my own album, but backup bands to Chicago. I was in a rock and roll band for a while. And so I've kept the music. But the thing that excites me, that always has excited me, is the physics and, of course, the space stuff. Early on, very much space exploration. And my dad was still in the Air Force, you know, with the Sputnik and some of that type of stuff that started those occurrences that started the space race at that time between the US and Russia. But I remember that, and I always wanted to do space. And that desire in my heart to do space, to do science, has never let me down. There's been multiple times that I have had to make hard decisions, that I have been living on welfare. There have been multiple times in my life that it's been hard because of the decision that I made, you know, but I've never regretted it. The words, I wish I were MBA, or I wish I were an accountant, or I wish, those words have never crossed my mind. So
That's a powerful way to live. And you know, Deb, when we talk about transience, I'm listening to you and I'm blown away. I'm sitting here looking all composed, but I'm really blown away. When we think about transilience, say in the science field, we think maybe, well, you're thinking nanoparticles, but for someone coming to it for the first time, the switch from analog to digital, right? That's a transilience jump. You know, in the social world, the switch from pre-Martin Luther King Jr. to the world after I Have a Dream. I mean, even in modern time, we could say, we now commonly say the world before COVID and the world after COVID.
That's true.
You know, in a short space of time, history will look back and they will identify this as a period where, for example, there was this little company that pre-COVID had a very small track record, but they were known, but their stock price was very small. And then during COVID, their stock price exploded. The name of the company? Zoom. Because pre-COVID, who was Zooming? I mean, corporates, you know, people who were doing around-the-world business transactions. But in the post-COVID world, every child knows what Zoom is. Everybody knows what Zoom is, you know. And you're talking to us, and that's transilience. And you are talking to us about the cost of transilience or what that looks like in the personal sphere. And thank you so much for sharing those things about it has to take a decision. And sometimes that decision led you to places like when you were on welfare. And still, when you come to looking back at your life, there's no, I wish I were at this or I wish I were at that. You know, that people are telling us that you can't have it all. Everybody, I think, is telling your girls in high school, you can't have it all. You have to choose. Do you want to be a wife and a mother, someone in corporate America, or do you want to be an engineer? And a lot of women, I have a lot of friends, brilliant, 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 brilliant. And there is this, you have to separate yourself. You can't be this and this and this. And they say that something will suffer. But Debbie, you are the woman who has had it all. Beauty. I didn't get to tell you about the year when she was the 4-H queen for the entire county. You know, she was the queen of the 4-H fair with what, 52 projects. In another year, she had 52 4-H projects going on at the same time. I told you, she's a genius. I mean, like from ever. I mean, even to say that you are a flautist to this day and that you had more dollars for that side, your creative, your musical side, you're the woman who has had it all. Beauty, brain, and brawn. And even the, pardon my pun, testicular fortitude that is needed to break the glass ceilings in these large corporations. What advice would you give to the young girls out there or the young executives who want a family? You have a family, you've got children, and they're healthy and they're happy and they're married. And they, you know, people make you think that if you have a career, your children will be, you know. What advice would you give? And how did you get it all or have it all or keep it all?
Oh, good grief. Yeah. No, that is an excellent question. One, the first thing, like I said, is follow your heart, because that, if you're doing that, if you've got a career that truly is what is in your heart, what gives you goosebumps, then that makes a difference, because it's not drudgery to go to work. Now, I was also extremely lucky in that the radiation field that I was involved in through the IEEE Institute of Electronics and Electrical Engineers, there's a large radiation, space radiation effects conference, and that I started going to like in 1978. And that conference has always had a social program associated with it where significant others and children were always welcome. The conference was fairly large, moderately large, you know, less than 1,000, but still a good group of people. So I took my kids to all my conferences. There's conference pictures of my kids, my son asleep on the chairs in his white shirt and black pants and his little tie and, you know, sound asleep. And when I was chair of a classified conference in 92, I took my oldest daughter with me, and she was with me every moment of the conference as much as she could be. But I always took my kids. The first time I did, when I was assigned program manager for a program that we were doing with Israel, our unit was on 4 of their satellites. They built the satellites. We provided the units to speak there. But the second time I went over, my youngest daughter was 3 months old, and she just went with me. And that was a program that the corporate vice president, the program was having trouble. And basically the corporate vice president, who knew who I was, and he was a mentor for women in executive positions. He had 2 daughters and he wanted nothing but the best for them. So he was an advocate for us females. And he had seen what I had done with the previous programs and stuff. And so when this program was having trouble, he said, "Deb, I want you to be the program manager for our Israeli program." And I said, "Well, I've got this baby." And he said, "So?" And I said, "Okay." So Adrian and I went to Israel when she was 3 months old. And while I was off doing business, our agent in Israel's teenage daughter was watching my daughter while I was off doing my meetings. And so I tried to involve them as much as possible. I know this is a long answer to your question, but
That's a great answer, because Deb, I want to ask, what year was this? You know, because I take my daughter along to all the conferences that my husband and I, well, I have helpers. My husband is amazing. He will be the daddy cool while mom is doing the speeching or whatever. And people look like, huh? That's so weird. Like, and you know, it's like in this day and age, really? That's weird. I mean, what year was this when you were taking Adrian 3 months that old?
That was the early 90s. Yes, it was 92. She was born in 92.
Talk about transilience. So, yeah.
I was taking my kids in the 80s. I was taking them to the radiation conference. It's another thing that's funny. I recently moved, unpacking boxes and stuff, you know, from the house I was in. I had to move so quickly. The house sold so blazingly fast that I was literally throwing things into boxes. And so I'm slowly going. And the funny thing is the number of welcome home, mom signs that I got, because I would travel a lot without my children and just going through boxes, you know, all these welcome home signs, mom, we miss you so much. Glad you're back. And that was kind of funny. And my children now, they're all grown. They are just all absolutely amazing. Again, this is, I'm very, very blessed. But they do remember that I traveled a lot. There are times that they said, boy, we wished you were there more. And now they're spread in 3 different states in the country, and all of them and their spouses want me to live with them. I'm currently living with my youngest daughter right now. And she has said forever, well, mom, you're going to live with me. You're going to live with me. She said that since high school, her high school, that I can remember. But so I'm very lucky. And I tried to involve them as much as I could. But in my case, you know, they didn't suffer. They definitely missed me, but they also knew that I was doing something I was happy doing. I loved what I was doing. I never want to retire. I don't ever want to retire. And they're letting me keep doing the things that I love to do because they know it's important.
I want to ask you to share the funny story when you told them that I never want to retire. And if I ever read this, you will not, you know, if you share with us the sign that, you know, it's time for you to retire. And they're like, mom, you know, their response, you know.
Yeah. My children, my son, they all have master's degrees. My oldest is an MBA. My youngest is 2 master's degrees, international diplomacy and that type of stuff. She's doing data analysis. And my son is an environmental engineer, biology type stuff. But, you know, none of them are physics people. I don't know what's wrong with them. But anyway, that's okay. But you know how the doctor asks you to fill out this form, which basically says, if you can't make your own health decisions, if you end up in the hospital and you can't, who's going to decide for you, you know? And so I put my 2 daughters down on the form. And we were on a trip and I said, oh, by the way, you guys are in charge of, you know, whether they, when to pull the plug, you know, it's up to you. And they looked and they said, well, mom, how are we going to know? And I said, if I cannot read and understand a paper from Nature Nanotechnology Journal, then it's time to let me go. You know, that's my measurement. It's time to let me. And they just both kind of looked at me and said, well, mom, that's nice, but how are we going to know if you understood it or not? And so, but I never want to retire. I do a little bit of golf, but I'd rather take my telescope to the beach or out in the middle of nowhere at night and look at the stars. Wow. I'd rather do that than play a round of golf. So,
wow. It sounds like the mark of a life well lived. So, Deb, as we wrap up this session on transilience, your life has been a beautiful marker of a woman who lived transilience through her youth. Mm-hmm. When your parents, and that's a good question too. I often like to ask, who would you say were your destiny strategists or your transilience coaches? And, you know, when you talked about your dad saying, hey, fam, we gotta go. And then the complete uprooting. I don't know, but were there any secrets that maybe they were unwittingly passing on in terms of change management? We would call it change resilience is really what transilience is. But, you know, is there anything there? Kudos to them, by the way.
Thank you for asking that question, because I've never really thought about, you know, it was kind of like, well, this is what's happening. You know, this is kind of shrug my shoulders, but it's like you roll with the punches, or whatever the phrase is in terms of dealing with the change. And, you know, it's interesting that I don't know if this is something that is would impact people too much today, but it's something to be aware of, I think. Because my father moved quite a bit, you know, we didn't stay in one place very long. Like, there were some years that it was three different schools, three different states, and that sort of thing. And one time I had a very good friend, Diana, and we're still friends, believe it or not. But she was just a very good friend, and her dad got transferred. And I can remember sitting on my bed, I think it was first grade probably, very young, and just crying because I was losing my very best friend. And I can remember saying, I am never going to make friends again with anybody else because it hurts too much when they leave. And that attitude kept me apart from a lot of people. It wasn't that I loved science and everything. It wasn't that. It was the fact that I intentionally decided that I was just going to separate myself from people because it hurt when they left. And it took me a while to grow out of that. And, you know, people who watch this may not have that exact situation, but it's kind of a be aware of things that have happened to you that might be influencing the way you view a new situation or the way you view change. You know, like if I can't think of something right now, but if there's a time that change is coming up in your life that you have to change and you react in a negative way to it, a lot of times I had to ask, oh, you know, if they're throwing me into a group of people that I don't know, well, I'm by myself. I'm going to go sit over in the corner by myself because that's how I decided to be. That hindered me. That was wrong. That was a bad choice to do that. But it was because I had decided I wasn't going to be hurt again. But because once I became aware of this thought, this incident, the thought and how I reacted to it, then that made interacting with people a whole lot different. And so if there's a change that someone is looking at, I would just encourage you to think about the whole picture. What is contributing to that place that you're in right now? And that's one of the things I do with my business right now. And the advising consulting role that I have is I help corporations look at their decisions, but pull in all the different pieces. Because a lot of the processes that corporations have are single. You know, let's just look at our strategic. Let's just look at our risk. Let's just look at our organization. And the process that I have pulls them all together. I learned it in the corporate world, or taught it, created it when I was in the corporate world. But it's so true for life, too. When you're making a decision and you feel a certain way, I have to remind myself to think about, you know, is it my health? Is it mental? Is it a history that I have? What are all the different pieces of life as I have it right now that are creating how I'm looking at a given decision or a change?
Mic drop. So. Wow. That was fire. That was golden right there. The living legend, ladies and gentlemen. And so, Deb, if organizations want to contact you for the Compass process, would you tell us a little bit about how, because this podcast is going far and wide and there are lots of early entrepreneurs, but there are also a lot of corporate individuals whose companies could benefit from the Compass process. Would you share a little with that?
Oh, I'd be happy to. It's so much fun because it's what I actually did when I was the executive director for our space group. My engineers came to me and they said, we've got this great idea for revamping our processor. It's going to make it easier to use. It's going to make it cheaper. You know, we could sell more, new markets. Wonderful. And I pulled together a multidisciplinary team, which was the first multidisciplinary team that the corporation had seen. And everybody told me I was crazy. And the first meeting I had our chief engineer, my head software guy, you know, but I also had the women who hand soldered the parts into the space processor for us. You know, there are aspects of building a space, anything that require almost hands-on work. Robots, close, but sometimes it's hands-on. Anyway, my chief engineer was sitting to one side and you know, Rachel was over there, and he looked at me and he said, "What's she doing here?" And I said, "Well, Andy, you're brilliant, but you can design things that she can't make. That he can't test. So they're here to kind of, you know, help us prevent those problems further down the line, so that what we create is something that can be made, that can be tested, that can be, you know." And that's kind of what the Compass process is, in a sense. It pulls together, it integrates. Think of a Venn diagram, and you've got three circles that are overlapping. The Compass process is right in the middle. And I have my corporation is Newberry Technology Associates. So I have some other extremely brilliant people that I pull in to help me. But the website is newberrytechsolutions.com. Thank you for asking. But we talk about the Compass process on that website. And I'd be happy to talk to anybody about it. So
newberrytechsolutions.com. Yes, what were you going to say, Dad?
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say I'm on LinkedIn. So if anybody wants to connect with me on LinkedIn, they can find me there too. Thank you. Thank you for asking. It's amazing. You could, making a decision, making a corporate decision, like which proposal to go after, or which new facility to move into, or which new piece of equipment to buy, making a decision in a couple weeks instead of months it's pretty cool. It works.
Yeah.
It really works.
And making one that you know is well backed by the facts and by the science and by the research. The living legend, ladies and gentlemen, Deb Newberry. And if you want to contact her, she's on LinkedIn. We will also drop the two websites, newberrytechnologysolutions.com and thecompassprocess.com. Both of those are there. If you're in aerospace, if you are the owner of Tesla, if you are in charge of SpaceX, you need Deb Newberry. If anybody knows how to get into here, this podcast, he needs to be in touch with Deb Newberry. All right, joking, not joking. Ladies and gentlemen, this is how we wrap up our first session of Transilience with a woman who has lived and continues to live the Transilience process in everything that she does. Deb, we wish you all the best. And to you, our listeners, we wish you soul growth and transilience in all that you do. Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you, Amber.